things you should keep in mind while you're listening to Micah and I watch this trailer. One, I haven't seen it yet. Two, Micah and I are the sullied half of this podcast. So the fact that we've been given the task of watching the trailer and reacting to it and then also not spoiling anything by speculating.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be super fun. So for my part, anyway, I don't remember much of what happens in books 4 and 5. So because I only read them once. I read the first 3 books many, many times, but books 4 and 5 I read through once each. So they're much fuzzier to me. So if I say something here, I'm not intentionally trying to spoil anything. It'll be like actual speculation on my part. And if I can think of something that was in the books, I'm not going to say it. Boom.
I think that's a great introduction. And I actually read A Feast for Crows not that long ago, reread, I should say. Mm-hmm. And then I won't even say halfway through because I don't even know what the halfway point is of A Dance with Dragons, but I'm about 300 pages into that book right now.
Okay.
So
yeah, you're not even close.
Some things are a little bit fresh. Okay. And I definitely enjoyed my reread of A Feast for Crows much, much more than I did the first time reading the book. But with all that said, I think we were all taken a little bit by surprise. I don't think it's that surprising, though, that they did include a trailer at the end of the IMAX screenings.
Sure, yeah.
And speaking of that, I know Eric and Zach are in Orlando. As we speak, they went to see Game of Thrones in IMAX. So that must have been really cool to experience, especially the Watchers on the Wall episode, that whole battle sequence, mm-hmm. which is pretty much the entire episode.
It's like made for IMAX almost.
It really is. It really is. So I'm excited to hear what they have to say. I didn't get a chance to see it. I don't know if I'm going to really get a chance to see it because I think it leaves theaters on February 5th.
Oh, that's soon. Okay.
It's a really, really short window to be able to see it. I'm interested on their feedback and then also being able to see the trailer in pretty high definition. I know, yeah, computers are computers, but to see it on a movie screen,
I know,
is awesome.
It's gonna be so cool.
It reminds me of last year in the Barclays Center when we got to see episode 1 of season 4, you know, to have that kind of atmosphere, mm-hmm. You know, to be around other people, because normally, let's face it, when we're watching Game of Thrones, maybe there's one other person in the room, but when you have an audience packed with Game of Thrones fans, there's nothing
amazing.
Like it.
I just had this like little daydream fantasy of this is like future where the Game of Thrones podcast, we all own a small movie theater. And so and we all live in the same town, maybe even the same house. Maybe this is like a friend situation, but we would be able to, for all future seasons of Game of Thrones, we would like show them, we would premiere them on our small movie theater screen with like alcohol and food that you could bring into the theater and like big comfy chairs, maybe even some couches. Everybody gets a blanket. And it would just like invite, I don't know, 200 people and watch Game of Thrones on a giant screen with people reacting every week.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
George can make that happen. George, he's got his movie theater down
George,
in
I know you're
New
listening.
Mexico.
Yeah. Or we can just like set that as a Patreon goal. At the $100,000 a month level, we'll fly everyone in. And we'll all watch Game of Thrones together.
How do you feel?
You're just breathing.
Yeah.
Breathing is all you can muster.
I feel privileged to have
experienced what we just experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I realize it's this nationwide thing, but we were among the first. We saw the 11 a.m. show. The AMC IMAX,
yep.
City Walk, Orlando, Florida,
true.
Universal's right across the street. And we have just seen the last 2 episodes of Season 4 and the preview of Season 5 of Game of Thrones.
We are joined by a handful of our friends here who also, well, some are new, some aren't. Podcast listeners, all of you guys, is it all of you except Kevin?
Yeah.
In true Game of Thrones fashion, we've managed to scrounge up an unsullied Kevin here who...
unsullied even for the show.
Even for the show.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to get to that because I want to ask a few questions because...
I slept through half of it.
Oh, no. How could you sleep? Everybody's dying.
It was a long night.
It's a movie theater.
Eric,
I sleep through all movies.
Yeah, they were pretty comfortable.
It's an IMAX theater, right? It's not just a movie. Yeah. Eric and I are in town for the Harry Potter. What's it called? What's the event called?
HB Celebration.
Harry Potter Celebration.
Which is normally every day for me after breakfast.
Yeah.
So
yeah, usually before breakfast it's kind of murky, kind of
so
gray.
So it's different
area.
Coming to Orlando and being a part of that. But we're here, and it was like a really convenient time that this IMAX event was scheduled while we were here, so we got to do this with friends, and we got to do it in an interesting place, and more importantly, we got to do it together.
Yeah.
Which was, I'm really grateful for.
We held hands during the, all the big fight
scenes.
We did.
We held hands. For me, right now.
Yeah.
And I know that we waited, we haven't spoken, we walked out of the theater.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, where do we go to record? Like, where do we go? But right now, yeah. This sounds different. We haven't done this on our podcast ever before. It's on a cell phone, and it's a little off the cuff, but we feel like doing that right now.
No,
and,
even talking, I know we'll have plenty of time to talk about the fifth season trailer, which went by in a blur of like information overload, but yeah. There were things I noticed, man. Seeing Game of Thrones in IMAX was a way different experience.
That's what I want. That's where my heart is right now, because I just wanted to shout it. I wanted to stop it I wanted to ask if they could pause it while we were going, just so I could turn to you guys and be like, hey, how different is this than we've ever seen the show before? Do you guys agree?
Yes.
I mean, I was worried that maybe it was just in my head because I love it, and I didn't know if you felt the same way. I didn't know if all of you guys felt. I feel like there's varying levels of desire for whatever's happening with the show. You know, like it's all just kind of subjective. Yeah. However you personally feel it, but
no, seems in IMAX.
Don't want to see it in any other way.
Yeah,
now.
I've been spoiled now. Season 5 should just.
I know, right?
Just go to my local IMAX theater and catch it.
I thought it would be good. I thought it would be different. I thought, that really neat. And right. they're gonna put it on. It was truly different. And it was,
I felt
just
like the emotion was that much greater, that much bigger. The screen and the emotion that it was conveying to me was equally proportional.
Do you remember how? I don't want to say silly. That sounds kind of, but remember how kind of silly the scene felt outside of the Heart Tree. In the north?
Yeah.
With the fire?
Oh, super silly.
Right?
With the skeletons
and
the super silly.
The fight and all of it just kind of felt, I remember when we were watching it, when we discussed it on the show, the finale, it just felt a little less than I think that they meant it to come across, but it felt like
Children of the Forest.
That's how you're supposed to see it.
Right.
Listeners know how I feel about the Children of the Forest and the reckoning and the introduction. Unbelievable. Like,
right.
Way crazy. And on the small screen, it felt a little silly, but watching it in IMAX, man.
Dude. And like Hodor's fighting with the hammer. Yeah. I was like, that is a fight scene now.
Unbelievable.
It was the same footage. You know what I mean? Frame for frame. It was the same
footage, just more immersive.
I don't understand it. I understand technically, but at the same time, it's a feat.
Thrones has outgrown the small screen.
Well, you guys have always said that each episode should be viewed as like a feature film, especially Watchers of the Wall. And so I feel like that more than anything, I was more excited to see.
Yeah, Watchers on the Wall just being one place, constant battle,
was crazy.
And it felt like a film. We're in a movie theater, for crying out loud.
It did. The way it began with the opening dialogue between John and Sam, and then it ended with Arya on the boat and like the score really kind of like eclipsing.
The score was fantastic.
Yeah.
The score has never been better.
I mean, yeah, no, this season, they raised the stakes, and we had all those weeks talking about it, and it was fun. We've had, like, a break. We've been in the middle of a storm of sorts for so long.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've obviously probably, in our own regards, rewatched some of the episodes and kind of re-experienced it on our own. I know that I definitely have, but not like that. And just hearing the sound, for one, be, you know, kind of shoved down your face by an excellent sound system.
Yeah.
That helps.
The mountain was drawing the blood out. That was absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of blood, there were two things I noticed. Watchers on the Wall episode in IMAX. First of all, it's how many blood puddles there were.
Blood puddles.
All
I
just,
like that.
Just laying around,
like
just, you know, puddle of blood here, puddle of blood there. Around
that was a
our,
band.
Around
no,
our heroes. They would step in it, it would squish, it made a squishy sound.
Yeah,
it was just this vibrant red, like blood everywhere, like, I don't know, set decoration, props. But no, the first one, he's up with Sam on the wall, they're just looking off at like the beginning of the episode.
Right.
And there's some torches lit, and he's carrying Longclaw, and there's a flame, just a little random flame, reflected in the eye of Longclaw, in like the gemmed eye. I never noticed this because, you know, it's so small, it's the gem of the eye of freaking Longclaw, the hilt of his sword. And the flame was reflected. I was like, this is just the coolest freaking thing in IMAX. It's like at least 2 inches
bigger
tall.
Than the screen that
bigger
you actually
than the screen
saw
I had.
On.
Yeah. So absolutely, I noticed it. I'm like, this is the coolest detail fucking ever. This is the best. Really set the scene, that Longclaw reflection there for me.
I just felt like I just there's obviously more screen real estate. I saw everything that was in there before. I've seen it. Watched it. We've all enjoyed it. Right. Everyone's listening home. If you're listening and you watched it like we did today, then you most likely understand what we're talking about. If you don't, I mean, the best that I can say is when they were outside of the wall and Mag and his friend were trying to pull down the gate. The guy who shot the arrow and then it showed the arrow fall.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I got this, and then didn't make the arrow fall and, you know, shot it, you know, killed a man and made him fall on the other side. Mm-hmm. You know, you could see like they're like had like this like buddy cop, like, oh, okay, well, I'll shoot an arrow now.
These characters, it has never been more clear to me. I'm sure it was when we first watched the finale, but now I forgot how much these characters love each other. Huge. This is huge. I mean, Stannis and Jon, this is the next episode, but still.
Yeah.
The way they regard one another for who each other are.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's not love for each other. That's all Ned.
But it's the same thing as far as I'm concerned. And the giants, they love each other. That was the king. We found out the next episode it was the king who stormed the tunnel because his friend had died.
Right.
It's just like... And he was the last of a long line of kings.
Yeah, and Grimm was just from a farm. They got a little celebratoriness. No, it was good. It was just, I don't know. And just the whole thing, I'm overwhelmed, honestly. And I'm just excited for the future because I feel like this could be... I want to say that this is like dipping the toe in the water and see what it tastes like.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope that the dip was good for everyone. I know it was good for us, and I hope that the powers that be who control the property are starting to think a little bit about, and they probably have been, and I'm sure that we're years behind on this, but I'm just grateful that we were able... as all of us viewers that love a television series, to be able to have this happen to the series that we love, because there's lots of different levels of people enjoying stories, and there's lots of different mediums that these stories are delivered. But our particular story, that as a book series that many people love, which still books are made for, was adapted into a series by HBO, thankfully, and HBO thankfully are full of people that think that putting their show into IMAX theaters across the country, even months after it aired, is a good idea. And it was a good idea.
It was a good
idea. Yes, it was.
Before we talk about the trailer, let's hear from our guests, our friends.
Yeah.
What were their things that stood out for these two episodes to them? What do you guys think about seeing the IMAX experience? Anything we talked about, really?
Anything? Now, anybody?
If you got anything, I'm opening it up.
Just the Babel, just seeing it on the big screen, I think. Because I just remember, like... Reminds me of seeing, like, the Lord of the Rings battles or something like that. Like, I just love watching battles on the big screen. And it was a huge screen. It wasn't even, you know, it's IMAX. So it's even bigger than a regular-sized movie screen. So that was really all the details of it and just seeing them.
Did you notice just a little bit of extra of the glory during that that long jacking
360 shot?
Yeah. That's the only thing I wanted to see.
That was really cool.
I was so excited.
There was just a little bit more going on. You could see it.
Oh,
and it just, it felt more wide up. It felt more expansive, and you could see more of like the pattern on the wall of the little buildings, and it was just like...
And the blood puddles.
The blood puddles.
Blood in the snow.
And then you can see more of, like, John's face was less scrunched when he, right before, because he does that whole, like, I looks around for a second before it begins, and it just felt so much less cheesed. Than it did on the small. It felt like okay.
The
right.
tuck and roll was still a bit cheesy.
I didn't think it was.
Oh, no,
listen, I stand behind it. You have to break the impact of your fall. She loved it.
I love Johnson.
Jump and roll. I will say, Sir Alistair, this was an issue of contention on the podcast when we did this episode recap. Wasn't sure if it was Thens that grabbed him and pulled him away because I thought it was Men of the Night's Watch. Somebody wrote in and said, "No, it's Thens." We just weren't sure. He gets pulled away after he gets like. Stabbed or sliced,
cut.
He gets pulled away. It's actually been Men of the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
I was. So they just took him. He was confirmed dead in the next episode. But
was he?
I think they said yes, Sir Alistair's. I think that's what Josh.
Well, Josh said Sir Alistair's fallen.
Yeah.
Oh,
I see. I don't.
He said he was
I don't know.
He's dead. He's not.
Oh, great.
I don't know.
So he's fallen.
I don't know.
What is fallen? Maybe?
I don't know.
Yeah.
These
Everybody
people have all read the books, probably.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Well, so I was glad. I'm more hopeful that he's alive because I'm more hopeful because it's not Fenn. So
well, not to skip ahead, but did you see?
He is alive.
Did you see?
Because he just got dragged. He didn't.
Right.
They didn't show him dead.
Exactly.
Like dragged isn't dragged to safety. Right, like, you know, kind of underneath.
Yeah, he's dragged to safety.
Wherever Master Aemon was hiding the whole time.
Well, he's just in the library, just having a read. Mm-hmm. I noticed, I don't want to skip ahead to us talking about the trailer, but I noticed that there was a shot of a pretty grand pyre with someone in the Night's Watch clothes. So I'm wondering
who it's for.
I don't know who it's for, but maybe Mace. I don't know. I just don't think that was a mortal wound on Sir Alistair Thorne.
Oh, Alistair. Yeah, you're right. Somebody was on top of a pyre. Somebody's.
I'm curious about that. Honestly, I'm not sure how that will turn out.
That's really interesting. I hope it's not Davos.
I doubt it'll be Davos. I doubt he'd be wearing the clothes of the Night's Watch. They were like, you know what? You know, we've been hanging out at the wall for a while. He takes the black and then he dies. That would be a really rough thing.
So, Kevin, the parts that you did not sleep through, when you occasionally stirred, woke up, what caught your eye as being, like, really strong?
I love the battle scenes.
At
the castle. And especially the wall.
Yeah, the wall.
Where you see just the guy's hand hanging.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, after the scythe.
Yeah.
That goes down the side. That was so cool.
That was awesome.
Before we watched, I asked you if you'd ever seen it, and you were like, no. So I was like, you're definitely going to be spoiling yourself on Game of Thrones in a lot of ways, because this is the finale of the most recent season.
This is where
the
characters end up.
And you said that you'd seen one episode before, and you'd seen...
I've seen the one where the last episode that they showed.
Oh, okay.
And the one where
the thumb into the eyes, killing him, destroying Red Viper.
Okay, so you've seen that. So now that you've seen episode 8, 9, and 10
uh-huh.
of the most recent season, I mean, like, how do you feel about Game of Thrones right now? I'm curious. Like, what do you think?
I don't know. To me, it's a good episode, but I wouldn't pay to buy HBO just to see Game of Thrones. I refuse to pay $50 a month. Or so, just to see Games of Thrones.
Mm. Is it $50 a month
or
for HBO?
However much.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
HBO costs.
Right.
When I rarely watch TV.
Or, well, let's say that it wasn't on a paid cable network.
I'd probably DVR it.
Okay, something that you're interested in?
If it was on a paid where...
Right.
On a network, there's like, I don't go on my computer to watch episodes.
Right, well, after seeing... It on IMAX now. I don't know if I'll ever watch it on my computer again either.
Yeah.
for what it's worth.
That's the truth.
You know?
Yep. That acting, can I just... That acting gets me every time. Each of these characters that these guys are pulling off successfully, it's not a modern environment. They're talking about swords and armor and shit and having to defend each other against it. Unbelievable stuff. Just crazy.
Yeah.
They're able to... Sam impressed me in the previous episode.
Open the fucking door.
How fucking good he was. Helping the brother out about being afraid and what it means to have an identity now. He's got a purpose with his lady.
Yeah?
Oh, that was my own, by the way.
Was that your own?
Yeah. I love all the location buildings.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome scenes.
Yes,
very clear
absolutely.
That a lot of that is on location. I want to know where that wharf was.
Worf.
Not Lieutenant Commander Worf.
Yeah.
Worf, where
Bat-Lev champion.
Bravosi ships were docked. You know,
the Saltman.
The
salty.
Arya's riding
boatman.
Over on the horse, and you just see this coast, and it's just like gorgeous.
I can't express how different it was. I mean, like I said, I know it's the same exact footage, but that the shot of the boat sailing.
Mm.
The shot of just approaching the boat. You know,
you
these wide angles just really were expansive, and you could just feel. You could feel the depth of the environment, and just I felt like Westeros was truly alive, you know?
Yeah.
And it honestly felt, it held up to me, it held up to watching something like, because I had just seen The Hobbit in IMAX 3D recently, it held up to me with the scope of those environments, and I know it doesn't have anywhere near the budget of these films, but it held up, like they're doing a great job with what they have available to them, the technologies they have available to them. And,
they're shaping the world
it just feels
fit
different.
Exactly their capabilities. Like nothing they tried felt like it failed.
Yeah,
you know, in terms of effects.
Right.
Do you know what do they call the figure at the front of the ship? That's on the front of the ship. It's the wooden usually.
It's a masthead, right?
Masthead. The Bravosi ship. The female masthead was carrying a shield.
Well,
it's really cool.
Again,
like
you know.
Just fighting, you know,
protect your
own.
Yeah, or mermaid, or in the case of Disney yesterday, our Ariel is in front of a ship.
Is she?
Yeah.
I checked my pedometer. To those of you listening in the care, clock just underneath 25,000
steps. 25,000
steps. Just underneath 25,000
steps.
Under the sea, and it was beautiful. And it was lots of fun.
And also about 25 minutes getting stuck on Test Track, too.
Yep.
That's true. And that's a long story.
Long story. We won't get into.
There was fire department. There was the wall. There was a leaning against the wall and being pat down.
Yeah.
There was lots of... Anyway, that was a great story. You guys, how do you feel after that trailer?
Oh, my gosh.
I forgot. I don't know if anybody noticed. I stood up. After
you forgot to expect the trailer.
I was like, let's get the hell out of here. Yeah. Then the trailer came, and we haven't watched it yet until. I know that last night.
Until now.
Last night, you and I were like tempted to watch it.
Yeah, it was posted online, and it was just like, Zach, you know this is up.
And I was like, oh, really?
We should probably not watch it.
And then I saved it for IMAX. What did you guys think?
The best thing. What
Can
did you guys
I
think?
Try to pull a Micah and Kate right now and oh, okay. just slide in a hint for the Sully listeners?
Okay, fine.
My favorite moment of the whole trailer was Arya standing in front of a door. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Standing in front of a door. Yes, one of the two doors was black, painted stark black, jet black, and the other one was white.
Yes, best moment of the trailer.
Wait, are you trying to give me like a hint too? You said stark black? I don't get it.
Stark is, you know, just contrasting colors. Okay. Is all I'm
all right.
I don't know what you think Stark means.
I don't know what Stark means.
It's more than one Stark.
I've never heard of Stark.
Yeah, one was black, one was white. I don't know where the hell she is. All these men shepherd her over to Braavos and then just leave her to go off on her own. Knock on doors.
That moment was too
Excuse
good.
Excuse me, sir.
Sorry,
I'd like to buy a cookie.
She can.
Yeah, she can.
Because about to ask her, I'm thinking about the episode again. Where did you get this coin, right? Mm-hmm. And then she says the words, and he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you a cabin.
Yeah.
You'll have the finest mead on the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have salt. Like, no shit. I saw a guy shoveling it.
We saw Tywin, his body.
Did we?
Jaime. Yeah, he was with Jaime and they were talking about how, well, Cersei has still not forgiven Tyrion.
We saw Tyrion.
I don't think she's
going
to forgive him for a while now.
No. No, definitely not. So she said something like, as that creature, every minute that goes by,
monster.
He takes another breath. Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm like, wow, she really wants to call people to action to come and find him and kill him. But Tyrion seemed like to be in a really good place.
Yeah, you know, he had the whole, like, lumber sexual thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that
lumber sexual.
Girls like girls like that, right? Girls, that's what I've been hearing recently. Whatever. You didn't like it? You're like, I prefer clean-shaven Tyrion?
Varys is still... Varys.
Oh,
shit on his face. Well, maybe... I don't know. We'll see. See, I always refer to Kate for all of those questions.
Varys is still plotting. That much is clear.
I was surprised, Eric, about the Varys plotting. I was so taken aback by how much the trailer gave us in that sense. Like, the trailer basically said, hey, we're going to help Daenerys become queen of Westeros.
Yep.
You know?
Here's where my allegiance lies, everybody.
I mean,
I was surprised.
That was a big, you know. So.
Did Sansa have darker hair? Yeah.
A little darker
and
hair.
And Littlefinger was all up thinner and.
Yeah.
He had lots of rings as well. You know? Did you notice that?
Yeah. I wonder what Baelish is trying to get Sansa to do. He was like encouraging.
You wonder?
Her. He says, "Avenge them." I think
right.
he said something like that.
Yeah.
No, but all of it was good. All of it was fantastical. That trailer was so heavy-handed in that theme with Daenerys and Tyrion that it leads me to believe that season 5 is going to hold so much more than that, because they've never given it away like that in the past before, the story arc, just in the first trailer, and I doubt that they'll do it now, especially not now.
Well, I think we're going to see a ton of Dorne. That much has been confirmed from casting, but that wasn't that much in the trailer that I noticed.
Did you see the sand stick?
Yeah,
I saw the sand stick. There was one woman who whips a barrel off, and there's a guy's head
it's
there.
It's a good shot. Pretty good shot.
Great friggin' shot, but I didn't notice. I didn't see Dorne Martell.
And props
He's
to
the
guy for
Alexander
balancing
City.
The barrel, you know?
I was looking for Alexander City in that trailer, and I was a little disappointed. They're clearly saving Dorne for the show, which is great. These are the characters that seeing them will make us feel like we need to see the show. They can't just show us a bunch of people we don't recognize.
Jonathan Pryce.
Or Jonathan Pryce.
What about Bronn unsheathing that sword to the sky?
Yeah.
I was like, Sir Bronn of Blackwater. Also, the harpy that fell from the top of the Great Pyramid of Irene.
Oh, man.
That was badass.
If they're backing Daenerys, but some shit is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Is that what you got out
did
of
they,
it?
I don't think they took it down. Did they take it down when they sacked Marine? It was up there.
I think it would have been
showed,
last year's trailer then.
I think it showed falling.
It did, yeah. It fell pretty hard.
Yep. Really hard.
Took it down, though.
Took down some stone with it.
For the harpy. She's just redecorating. That's just spring. That's going to be the opening scene of season 5. It's just spring cleaning, you know, redecorating.
Oh, gosh. They just take the turn and show it a whole new direction.
The harpy is, like, really sending a bad message about slavery, and I'm not all about that.
It has a cat of nine in one hand.
She just had her own statue cast in iron.
Yeah, it looks perfectly to her likeness.
Yeah.
It's actually Daenerys' head on Khal Drogo's body with Varys' haircut. It's beautiful. Will you guys come and see Game of Thrones in IMAX again if there's an opportunity?
No question.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was that a no?
No question, Eric.
No question.
No more questions.
Yeah, no question because it's no.
She's like, I really, I enjoy, I prefer listening to the show.
If it's a success and they make money off it, I'm sure they will do it again.
Probably.
Yeah.
So. Most likely.
You're right, I can't figure out why it felt different, but it just did. It felt like a completely new experience. It did. And I'd seen those episodes like 5 times.
Mm-hmm. It felt like a different show. It just felt bigger. And that makes sense because it literally was bigger.
Right.
And the sound literally was louder.
Yeah.
But I've just, you know, we live in a culture right now where watching things on your phone is normal. Watching things on your computer is probably where most people in our age group actually watch things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just what they, it's just what, how it goes. And I actually watched, believe it or not, Eric, I actually watched the children, the finale, at a family member's house on a big TV.
Yeah.
On HBO while it was on, not watching on HBO Go before we recorded last year.
Yeah.
And I felt, you know, everything that I said before about all the scenes feeling different, like, that's how I felt then as well. So it wasn't the TV and it wasn't the louder, I think it was a little bit of the whole experience that made it what it is. But just more importantly, I think the screen size just played a huge role for me enjoying a lot more of what was there, because they clearly do a good job of not...
Because you see more detail.
Absolutely.
When you're seeing it off on a big screen compared to, like, a TV or your...
Computer. iPad, etc.
So this is the experience of rediscovering. I was tilting my head and looking around. What's in the left corner? What's in the right corner, too? Because it's just... There's that real estate, as you mentioned. There's just that extra space to look at it.
Right.
You know, and because I had seen it once or twice before, I didn't need to look in the actors' faces when they were talking, you know, to figure out who it was or what they were saying. I could appreciate the environment more.
I just felt like it was a bigger world, and that's half of the reason this story is so successful. I mean, not half, but it's just, you know, when you see epics like Tolkien's Lord of the Rings or George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, you know, and that's one of the reasons why the introduction is such a big hitter for me, because... Right before you watch the episode, you get this sort of reality of this is the world, this is where everything is, and that's the point. It's supposed to be big, and it's supposed to be a place that you can chart geographically and live in with the episode. And that just felt like it made more sense now. It was just better.
Yeah, I agree.
I would absolutely see that again.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I hope that we can see that again.
I'm sure we will.
In traditional fashion, I think that we should save our true conversationing for new trailer with Micah and Kate.
Kate and Micah,
and we'll do the trusty old Game of Thrones frame by frame. You've all come to know and love over the past few years.
First, I'm going to read the tweets in however long it takes me or less.
Right, and I'm sure Micah will be full of lots of hints, and I'm sure Kate will back all those hints up with reckless abandon, and we will be left in the dark until April 12th. But until then, we remain your friends, and we remain unsullied.
Not all of us.
Well.
Some.
Not you guys.
Let's get into this. So we're going to watch the trailer. This is how we're going to do this. We're going to watch the trailer for season 5 of Game of Thrones. And we're going to hit play at the same time. We're going to talk over it. And I think that Zach's going to edit in the audio later, so it'll be like you're watching with us. And then we'll discuss as non-spoilery as we possibly can.
Yes, we're going to try.
I'm going to press play when you say go.
I'm
going
to count to 3 and then say go.
Okay.
Are you excited, Kate? This is the first time you're seeing this.
I know. I'm so excited.
All right. Here we go. Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Nothing's more hateful than failing to protect the one you love.
There's no justice in this world.
Of course, we get like the classic one-liner.
Right. Wow! Sand snakes!
Avenge them.
Baelish.
Yeah.
I believe men of talent have a part to play in the war to come.
It's a weird cover of this song.
I will never sit on the Iron Throne.
Yeah! Beardian.
You could never climb those steps and take that seat. We can be heroes.
I like the music.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stop the wheel. I'm going to break the wheel.
Whoa!
Monsters out there somewhere drawing breath.
I don't think I'm ready for what I deserve.
Tyrion and his wine.
Yeah.
They'll never even find what's left of you.
Strip away the gold. Knock down the
Eric got his Theon moment.
Yeah, it's Reek.
And this is what remains.
The Seven Kingdoms needs a ruler loved by millions with a powerful army and the right family name.
Good luck finding him.
Who said anything about him?
Oh, yeah! Oh, shit! Oh, my God! That was amazing. Holy shit.
It was good, yeah.
That statue coming down at the end was so perfect.
Yeah. Amazing.
So well done.
And now I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit about it, and then we can go through it a little bit slower than that, because I don't think we really said a whole lot. That's usually what happens, is we're like, oh, yeah, we'll talk over it, and then we get completely mesmerized by what we see. Yeah. It's like, we don't want to screw up this moment.
So
initial reaction.
So, again, the books are quite fuzzy to me, and obviously, I think that some of the discussions that we've had about the last few chapters even have had a direct bearing on this trailer, which is things like, you know, where do Varys's loyalties truly lie? Has he always just, like, secretly been a supporter of the Targaryen return to the throne, since we know that he's been plotting to, like, aid or at least spy on Dany, keep track of her movements. And he's been in contact with Illyrio since the beginning of this tale. And it seems like this trailer has made it very, very clear that Varys is very pro Daenerys and that he and Tyrion are going to be seeking to get her on her rightful Westerosi throne. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very interesting that they've, because for me, the plot of book four is much more, it's much more hazy than that. It's not, it doesn't seem to be like, this is the goal and this is what this whole season is going to be about. This is what this whole book is about. There's one thing, and that's going to be like a Dany this was a very Dany heavy trailer, I think. There's like the, especially with the statue coming down at the end and that like very, that very dramatic pronouncement from Varys. It seems like season five is going to be like, let's see some Daenerys Targaryen action. What do you think?
Yeah. I think the focus of the trailer unquestionably was on Dany, even from the side, as you mentioned, with Varys and Tyrion. And then a little bit of Lannister. We saw that early on with Cersei and Jaime. And
yes.
The revenge she's looking to seek. We saw Tommen and Margaery. And I think everything is starting to come together a little bit more. You know, we still have new areas to explore, but by and large, the families that we've been with from the beginning, we're still seeing. You know, we saw Sansa, we saw Arya, we saw Jon, and we can talk a little bit about him and what he's up to. And then there were just these little snippets of other characters that we've come to know over the season, last few seasons, I should say. But I really think that the focus now is going to be, as you mentioned, on the Targaryens. You know, you mentioned book four earlier. Book four is absent of Tyrion. I think that we're jumping ahead. I think that, I don't know, like I'm excited to see how they really take a lot of plot from book five and infuse it into the season without doing too much to spoil the book readers. I think that's a huge task for them. I don't know that they're going to be able to completely do it. We've heard a lot of talk, a lot of chatter about there being some moments that are going to be new.
Yep.
And new in the sense, not that they just decided to write them in and change the plot, new in that it's canon and that it's just information that book readers have yet to be privy to because there's no book six that we can open and read from.
And you and I have had some amount of discussion about how we feel about this. I am super pumped because of a few things. One is that I really trust the showrunners at this point. Two is that the show has diverged from the books so significantly in what we've already seen that I feel confident that it might continue to do so, and maybe even more so. So the stories that we get from, you know, books 6 and 7 might not be that similar to what we'll see on the show previous to that. And also, I'm not the world's biggest fan of Feast for Crows and Dance with Dragons. So whatever they can do to make those books more exciting, combine those storylines and come up with a product that will be more compelling, I'm excited for it. And it's not that they're bad books. It's still the best series of books maybe ever written, in my opinion. But as far as like what I choose to reread, I always stop at the end of book 3 when I reread the series, just because I'm like, oh, Feast and Dance are so long. And it's very much that like establishing middle ground. It's like the same kind of Wheel of Time problem that Robert Jordan had, where it's like there's a lot of like traveling and trying to figure things out, intense conversation. And I'm like, you know, I'm ready for some action, Jackson, you know? So
I agree. If I'm remembering correctly, they're really the same book. You're basically getting one story that's split up into two books,
right?
And there's a lot of overlap in terms of timing. The early part of A Feast for Crows sinks into the timeline a bit with Storm of Swords, and then the beginning portion of A Dance with Dragons sinks in timing wise with a lot of A Feast for Crows,
right?
And then we kind of return to the present, so to speak. So a lot to digest. Let's take a minute here, or 2 minutes, and go through the trailer again. I think we can go mostly scene by scene and just note some things.
Right.
It opens up with Cersei, and it looks like Tywin being laid out, paying respect to her father. And she doesn't seem too happy. I don't think we would expect her to be.
Right. She's like leaving. Looks like she is walking away from Jaime. She's leaving him there. Jaime's the one that remains at the throne while Cersei walks away.
And Jaime's standing there looking very teary-eyed. I think it's a realization for him. He's freed Tyrion, and Tyrion's turned around and killed their father.
Although I don't know if Tywin was necessarily super awesome to either Cersei or Jaime. So I wonder, like, Tywin was the one who was going to marry Cersei off to whoever, and she was not into that. So now Tywin's dead. So Cersei gets to kind of do whatever the hell she wants, right?
She does, but I've always thought that she may not have really liked her father very much, but Tywin Lannister is such a symbol of power in Westeros, and the fact that he's now dead is a huge blow to their family.
I agree.
And now we talked so many years, I'd even say, on this show about how there have been blow after blow after blow to other families, whether it was the Starks, the Baratheons.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Lannisters are finally starting to get their comeuppance in this series. Tywin is dead. Jaime has been maimed. Cersei's not in the best position. She has a lot of enemies all around her in King's Landing. Her brother has escaped, and we know that despite his relationship with Jaime, albeit very different of how things are in the books, he does not like his sister, and he will never like his sister, and that's just another major enemy to have floating out there somewhere. And we see in this trailer now that it's very possible that he could join up with another family to try and take the Iron Throne away from her and Tommen and the rest of the Lannister family.
Are you suggesting that Jaime might side with Tyrion?
I'm not sure. I don't really see how the plot for Cersei and Jaime are going to ultimately play themselves out.
Right.
I think we have to see more develop. And I know that, you know, based on some spoilers that were posted, I'd say late last year, we know his direction is much different in this show from where he goes in the books.
I see.
I don't want to go into it. We'll watch it during the season, and we can of course discuss the differences. But as far as him aligning himself with Tyrion, it's hard for me to make that decision because the event that takes place in the books leaves such a sour taste in Tyrion's mouth about Jaime, despite the fact that Jaime has set him free.
Right.
That I wonder if that relationship can ever be repaired. I know that of the two, I can definitely see the relationship becoming, you know, repaired between himself and Jaime, never between himself and Cersei.
I agree. So let's continue going through this. I was just looking at the next. There's a next scene of a caravan with a series of horses and a litter being drawn, but I can't make out the flag at the head. It looks like blue and gold, maybe. So I'm not totally sure which family that is that's riding.
Yeah, it is a little bit difficult to make out.
Yeah, and then it goes right into Jaime and Cersei having this weird, awkward moment together. I'm watching this with the sound off, by the way, so I can't remember the voiceover, but I'm just judging by their expressions.
They're cheesy one-liners. You don't have to worry about them.
I'm sure they mean a lot once you've, like, you know what's going on.
Well, the first one to me doesn't even make any sense.
Which was what?
Nothing's more hateful than failing to protect the one you love.
Mm.
What does that mean?
Well, I suppose she could be blaming Jaime for Tywin's death. If that's the case, he failed to protect Tywin from Tyrion.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely a possibility. I just don't like the combination of words. I think that's getting into semantics a little bit.
Sure. But it's a very Cersei thing to say.
Yeah.
So then after this caravan.
Rowboat.
We have a rowboat with a like maybe some wildlings. It looks like the men on the shore are wearing armor. So maybe this is, I don't know what's going on here. It looks fucking cold though.
Yeah, definitely somewhere in the north. You're right. It could be wildlings.
Yeah.
It could be out at a place like Eastwatch.
Eastwatch by the sea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. But I don't know. I mean, there's obviously a big focus on who would be in that boat, but it's very hard to make out.
Okay. And then we have a scene of Bronn drawing a sword and Jaime looking very tired behind mm-hmm. him. So presumably.
Interesting traveling companions there.
Yeah. Maybe he's continuing his lessons with Jaime. And then we have a really cool, interesting scene with torches. And a bunch of people wearing crazy masks. I don't know what that looks. That looks maybe like across the narrow sea. Kind
yeah,
of stuff.
I think so. Somewhere in the east. And then
something exotic.
We get Baelish talking to Sansa.
His new protege.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like he's, or
is he her protege?
Me. I don't know. I think that Baelish has a lot more to teach Sansa, especially about the game. And it sounds like he's giving her lessons now. He's like, this is what you're going to do. You're going to grow up to be like a ferocious player of the game, just like me, which is terrifying and awesome.
Says there's no justice in this world unless we make it. And I saw a very interesting comment and I want to get your thoughts.
Sure.
And I'm going to be very vague in this comment, but the comment stated that Sansa is going to take the place of a certain character that everybody was expecting to show up at the end of last season.
Ah. Ah, the one that we've recorded our Sullied rant about.
Yep.
For those folks that listen to that. That is very interesting. I find it a little unlikely for her to fully take that character's place because the nature of that character and her companions just doesn't fit with anything that Sansa's going to get up to. I think that Sansa will maintain her place in nobility. I think that she'll continue to be associated with Peter Baelish. And so I see her playing the game from within the confines of that structure, of that system, more so than I see her being truly like the feralness of the character to which we are referring.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think she could definitely take on certain attributes of that character.
Yeah.
I think clearly she's going to want revenge for her family. And there's that moment later on in this trailer where Baelish talks to her about that.
Yes.
And we would expect that, you know, having lost her mother, having lost Rob and having lost, well, going back, you know, to season one, her father, and then she still thinks Bran and Rickon are dead. Mm-hmm. So really, she has no cause to think any member at this point of her family is alive because Arya is a huge question mark. And, you know, John is not really ever seen as being a real member of the Starks, especially by Catelyn. And we know sort of, I think the influence that Catelyn had on Sansa, in early on in the series. You know, Sansa is more the proper lady. Arya is more of the tomboy, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But right now, she believes her entire family to be dead. And mm-hmm. I would think if I were in her position, I'd want revenge as well if I could get it.
This is a completely off topic. But Sophie Turner also, I don't know if everybody heard this, got cast as Jean Grey for one of the upcoming like young X-Men style, the first class era movies. And I'm super excited about it. She's going to rock it. Anyway, let's continue. The next scene is obviously the sand snakes. We have the probably, I'd say most of them. And one of them is whipping the shit out of a barrel. And the barrel flies off to reveal a man's head who is clearly buried to his neck in the sand.
He's got some problems.
And there's some scorpions wandering around him. So the sand snakes are already showing themselves to be ferocious. I don't know. I don't recognize who this is, this bald man.
Yeah, I don't know who it is. I'm sure we'll find out. But of course, the sand snakes, the daughters of Oberyn Martell.
Right. Who must be infuriated.
Yeah, they're a little pissed off. I think we saw a message that they sent a little bit later on in this trailer to Cersei.
Next scene, wherever it is that Tyrion has ended up, we see several scenes of him sort of in the like this lush lap of luxury, presumably after his long boat ride. He ends up in this tropical paradise, and I think this looks like an establishing scene of that. Same setting.
Yeah, it's definitely somewhere out in the east. We, of course, have an idea of where Tyrion is going to be traveling.
Right.
He's with Varys. We see him at multiple times in this trailer. Mm-hmm. We'll save the surprise if it's really a surprise. I don't know, but
we have another scene of Baelish and Sansa.
That's the Avenge Them scene.
Yeah, the Avenge Them. It's very interesting how they've chosen to portray Sansa in the scene because she looks exactly like her mother. Her hair looks darker. It's braided in a much more conservative way than the ways that she's been doing her hair, especially when she was at court. It was much more like Marjorie Tyrell. But now she's...
That's how I braid my hair.
It's beautiful on you too. But she's wearing the like less makeup or something. But in this particular scene, I have it paused. She looks so much like Catelyn. And you know that's what Peter Baelish is thinking too.
Yep.
Weirdo. Okay. So then
me or him?
No, him. Well, both of you. We have another scene that looks like related to the rowboats from earlier.
And they do look like wildlings, at least from what we know them to traditionally dress.
Yeah, they look like they're wearing skins. I see a few men in black. The men on the boats look like they're wearing black. There's a man on the pier who also looks like he's wearing black. So this might be some kind of clash between wildlings and Night's Watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even though Mance has been captured by Stannis and they've defeated the wildlings, at least just north of the wall at Castle Black, there's still many other factions of wildlings that have tried to either climb the wall in certain areas, go around the wall. Mm-hmm. You know, Mance was just not leading a war on that one front.
Sure.
He had... You know, backup plans. And I think that maybe to your point, that's what we're seeing here. And you know, John finds out about it. He's got to go and handle these situations. Of course, they are in a much better position now, having Stannis's men as a resource for them.
Next scene, I believe this is Daenerys. It's a little hard to tell. The face is kind of obscured, but it looks like she's offering a bit of her blood for something. I'm not sure if I've got that face right, but it looked
like a child to me.
Well, so she's got long, like whitish blonde hair. And so it could be, I don't know, it could be Myrcella.
I think it might be a younger version of a certain character.
Okay. So then we have a scene of presumably Margaery and Tommen having just gotten married. Or at least being presented together as an engaged couple, which is great. Tommen looks adorable in his little crown. Everybody's very excited. They're clapping. And it looks like she's wearing the cloak of protection, which is a traditional part of the marriage ceremony. So I would guess that this is them having just gotten married.
And then we have a shot of more wildlings.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like the Lord of Bones is leading the charge there.
So such a cool helmet.
I want one of those.
Oh my God. So awesome. Yeah. So I think the scene that we've been seeing earlier where I was like, I think they might be wearing armor. This is exactly what the garb was. So those two previous cold scenes were definitely had to do with wildlings.
Yeah.
And now they're on the move. Varys and Tyrion are arriving, Tyrion rather unceremoniously, into this tropical paradise land. Looks like he survived his boat ride with a little more hair growth on the head and face, but otherwise looking
well, he can't shave in there.
As he was, yeah, but he managed to maintain his tan, which is great.
The rays came through the box. And, you know, Varys slipped him in a little bit of sunscreen to make sure that he preserved his
probably
beautiful skin color.
The next scene we have is what looks to be Dragonstone. This looks like someone's about to be strapped to a pyre and burned. I'm saying Dragonstone because one of the figures at the front looks like Melisandre, just to the left of the pyre. This is all speculation, but she's way into burning people. And this does have that like dreary look of Dragonstone. I would have said Winterfell, but that's been sacked. So
yeah. Well, she's at the wall now, so I mean that could be the wall.
Oh sure, yeah, yeah. So they might be doing a burning at the wall. Oh yeah, okay. So if you look,
yeah,
because
I can see the lift in the background.
Yeah, the lift in the background and the frozen stuff. Yeah, okay. So they're at the wall. And
so I would say
gonna burn somebody.
My guess would be either Mance or Tormund, because both have been captured.
Ooh, yeah.
As far as we know. So okay. We know Melisandre is crazy about her sacrifices and
yeah, she's way into him.
Somebody is gonna get lit up.
We have a scene of Cersei looking very smug indeed. That's all she's doing. We have more of Varys and Tyrion in some kind of wild exotic market where a man is offering them a very large snake and they seem nonplussed. They're cool with it. Varys looks a little bit out of his element maybe. They're clearly like seeking someone. So that's exciting.
Do you think it's troublesome for Tyrion to be traveling around with Varys or vice versa for that matter?
I think it's very interesting that Varys is like a master of disguise and he's just going around looking normal. Like, that's not a great idea for you, Varys. I understand that for the conceit of television, we have to be able to recognize him. But I do think that, like,
at least pull a hood up or something.
Yeah, Tyrion's got a beard and he's got a hood. But Varys is not an anonymous creature. And he doesn't seem to be too worried about being recognized. I doubt that'll come into play. I doubt he's like trying to broadcast that they're there, but you never know.
And then we get a quick cut scene of some horses running.
Yep. Very fast.
And switches to John, which if you're listening with the music, there's that we could be heroes. And of course, as heroes is sung, it flashes a picture of John.
Ooh, good catch.
Because who else would you want to be your hero?
Right.
Aside from Jon Snow.
Yeah, he's looking very heroic. He's perched on top of something at the wall. And then there's a scene of Sansa in a bath.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen there. I'm kind of nervous, to be honest with you.
Well, you never know. There's a lot of perfectly innocent bath scenes in this show. But she's looking very... very relaxed.
And then we get two women walking into the woods together.
Holding hands.
We get that from
I'm guessing
behind.
I don't know who these people are.
One of Daenerys's great lines about the wheel, which wheel she's talking about.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a scene of like a giant leaning against a wall. I'm saying giant instead of a man because of the way that he's moving is almost like ponderous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and maybe not like a true giant, but he looks quite a bit larger than a normal dude, but I could be making that up.
No, he does.
Wildlings who are approaching some kind of a fort and they're looking at the gate warily. Daenerys is going to break the wheel.
Yeah, she's going to break it. She's not just going to stop it. She's going to break it.
Yeah. And then Jorah is in a fighting pit. And he's got some. It looks like he's been bloodied already on his arm. There's a
I wonder
large
what he's
blood.
Doing fighting.
I wonder what he's doing fighting.
Is he trying to earn back his honor? Because we know that he's been dismissed.
He's been exiled, right? Yeah.
Yeah, by Daenerys.
We don't have any proof that she's watching this.
No, we don't.
But let's look at the outfits in the background are very, they look very Astaporian, if that's the right word. Like it looks like the kind of like silky, colorful stuff that people have been wearing in the towns that Daenerys has been in recently. So at the very least, he's not back in Westeros here.
No.
He's still on her side of the Narrow Sea.
And I think that he's going to at some point try and get, you know, win himself back into her favor.
Right.
I think that really she is all he has, if we're being yeah. completely honest here. He doesn't want to go back to Westeros mm-hmm. without her or without standing by her side. And it's going to be a tall task for him to prove himself, because if you remember how he left in the last season, he was riding away on his pony.
Yep.
And he looked pretty
he looks pretty sad. Yeah. It was very much a goodbye moment for Jorah, but it makes sense. He's not going to give up that easy, especially because he doesn't trust the people that are around her now. And so if he's truly interested in her well-being, he's now going to have to go to some pretty drastic measures to prove it.
I think, and this could be a topic of discussion, whether or not he trusts Barristan. I think for all intents and purposes, Barristan is a very honorable guy.
Sure.
He masks his true identity in the book. In fact, where we are in A Storm of Swords, he's yet to reveal himself mm-hmm. To her. And I think that moment gives her a cause for concern, and we won't get into exactly how it plays itself out because it does tie in to Jorah's storyline as well, and we haven't gotten there in the book. But I think you're right that all the other people that we've seen around her are non-trustworthy just from the sheer fact that she's gone from city to city, and she's acquired certain people in each of those cities, some who have proven their worth, some who are, you know, just waiting for the next opportunity to make some money.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, that's a lot of the individuals that she comes across are just they're sellswords, or they're very passionate about the cities in which they live, which you would expect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's unfortunate that all of these cities are slaver cities, but, you know, this is how these people have lived their lives for however many years, and they take exception to the fact that she is coming into these cities, she's liberating them, and she's really taking away their power.
Right.
And I think she's going to now in this season start to see some of the pushback as she has taken up residence now in Yunkai.
I think that, I mean, all of this, us speculating about this again, I've mentioned this before, it's kind of like, are we speculating or are we spoiling? But I think it's pretty natural to think like she's liberating these towns and then she's just like leaving governments behind in her wake. And it may not be as simple as that. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be more complicated.
I don't think we're spoiling, because if we were spoiling, we would say, oh, well, they left out this character and this character does this, which sure. has huge implications. Yeah. And, you know, I think we're going down the path that a lot of people who have watched the first four seasons would start to, you know, draw similar conclusions. And then we get a really cool moment.
Yeah, this is super cool.
With Cersei sitting at a table, and she opens this.
It's like a puzzle box?
Yeah, it looks like a puzzle box. And inside is this, looks like a viper to me.
Yeah.
And I alluded to this earlier on when we were talking, that perhaps this is a message being sent from Dorne.
This is a red viper.
For what was done to Oberyn Martell.
Yeah, it's a red viper with some kind of pendant necklace wrapped around its lower jaw. But this does look like some kind of threat from Dorne.
And then Cersei says that monster's out there somewhere drawing breath, and of course referring to Tyrion. We get a shot of him
as well.
Gets
the next scene being a monster, and she's talking to Jaime and in strong, fierce tones, and Jaime's like just taking the berating. He's like, yeah, okay, I get it. Then we have Melisandre setting fire
Yeah, a little resolution to that scene earlier.
Yeah, she's setting someone on fire. And then there appears to be a different kind of fire next, which is a funeral pyre for someone.
Yeah, probably for Melisandre as well.
You think so?
I think she just likes to light people on fire. She's a pyromaniac. I think that's the truth about her. And it has nothing to do with Roller. It's just that she has an obsession with fire. And I, you know, we talked about this back in one of the chapters, probably Arya's chapter, the difference between her and Thoros of Myr, the fact that, you know, she, you know, sacrifices people, whereas Thoros breeds life back into people. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting, sort of the dichotomy of this religion. We could talk about it for probably an entire episode. But she's whack.
She's super whack.
And
next we have Tyrion taking a shot of something. He's resigned himself to drinking and feeling sorry for himself.
Yeah, well, it's good to see Tyrion. And actually it doesn't look like wine, unless it's the wine of the particular city that they're in. Looks like he was drinking some hard liquor there.
Then we have a scene of what looks maybe like Jon Snow or somebody yelling with me.
Yep.
And
come on, you know those curly locks.
I know, but they're all really greasy and wet. So I don't. You're just sort of a lot of curly hair. But it looks John yelling with me, and then some kind of wildling Night's Watch battle, which sounds very exciting.
Yeah, and then Jaime entering a palace.
Yeah,
looks to be dressed in
some lighter clothing.
Yeah, it looks actually. When I first saw it I thought it was. Oberyn Martell, the way that he's dressed. So could Jaime be in Dorne?
Yeah, Jaime could
be in Dorne. We know Marcella's there.
I will say that's not anything I remember from the books. Mm-hmm. There's a very sexy lady.
Not wearing much.
Not wearing a whole lot, but she's got a great bod, and she's turning towards someone invitingly because it's Game of Thrones. We've got to get our quota. And then we have the lift going up the wall. And I just listened to what Olenna said. She's fucking threatening someone.
Yeah, she said, "They'll never find what's left of you."
She's either threatening or warning someone, like, not to do something.
I think it's a warning. I don't. The delivery of it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, don't do this. They're never going to find.
She looks concerned about that person.
Yeah. It's just, again, it's just a shadowy figure. Can't see who it is.
And then we get some fight sequences.
Olenna appears to care only about her. Like, I would guess that she's speaking to Marjorie here. It's the very high likelihood she's speaking to Marjorie. Maybe to Tommen, if Tommen is using some kind of strong language. It seems like a weird thing to say to the king, but and even to the queen, is just like, "They'll never find what's left of you." I don't know. But it's sort of hard to imagine her speaking compassionately and giving someone a warning if they weren't like immediately important to her, you know?
Well, and the question would be, is Olenna still in King's Landing or is she back?
True.
And that would obviously influence who she's saying that to.
There's a scene of Jaime getting the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah. By who? It's a little hard to tell. It doesn't look like one of his fights with Bronn, because that dude is not wearing Bronn-esque clothing.
No. It looks like almost like one of the Sand Snakes, which would be pretty cool. The Sand Snakes beat up Jaime. Okay, so here's a shot of presumably Yung Kai or something similar, with a graffiti on the back that says "Kill the Masters."
And by graffiti, you mean blood.
Blood graffiti, and someone wearing one of the aforementioned cool ass masks that we saw. So this is all I assume that means that the masters here are wearing these ornate golden masks, and
and we saw them earlier on in the trailer. So there appears to be some conflict, some uprising, that Dany is going to have to contend with.
So, and then there's that quick shot of Reek looking,
Eric's going to be happy.
And then there's a shot of this person riding on a horse, and it looks like the same costume of whoever was beating the shit out of Jaime.
Right. And he looks like he's riding at Bronn, who's about to
do some damage to
that horse.
Do some slicing. Yeah. So there's some kind of Dornish encounter between Bronn, Jaime, and a third party, male or female, but certainly Dornish. There's some almost look like monks.
Yeah. The voiceover says, "Knock down the statues, strip away the gold,
knock down the statues and remains." Yeah. So there's something going on. There's They look like monks. They have hooded black robes, and they're breaking open casks of ale or wine or something. Mm-hmm. There's Arya knocking on a door that is both Arya. Black and white.
Yeah, she's been the subject of a lot of the Raven's messages that we've gotten on Twitter.
She has a damn cool storyline. She's picking up
really people. Cool.
She's wearing a dress, which I think is interesting, and she's looking at Needle.
And then we get Varys's line, the Seven Kingdoms need a ruler loved by millions. And what's interesting is the scene that this is voiced over is a shot of what looks like soldiers from the Vale.
Yes. Yep. They have the bird, which I assume means that they're being sent by Baelish somewhere. So to me, that could imply that Varys and Baelish are working in tandem.
That would be interesting.
It would be. And then there's a cool shot of like of some kind of battle map with little X stick figures on it.
Dreadfort, right?
Is this the Dreadfort? Oh.
I don't know. I remember from when Rob had that map a couple seasons ago, and then he used the X's to mark
the Flayed
where
Man.
Roose Bolton's troops were.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does look like little Flayed Mans. But I wonder whose map this is. Stannis, maybe? There's no Stannis in this trailer. Varys says, well, we need a family ruler loved by millions. And
with Tyrion, the right name.
Yeah, with the right name. And Tyrion says, good luck finding him. And Varys says this, he like puts his hands
That's
on his
the
hips
line
all
of the
sassy.
Trailer.
He's like, who said anything about him? And then there's a wonderful like shot of Daenerys. She's her dragon has got a very big head.
Is that Drogon? I would think.
I think so. Yeah.
He's the badass. He's the one who's still, by the way, nobody knows where he is.
Yeah.
He took off and the other two are locked up for the time being.
Right.
But where Varys and Tyrion, they look like they're in Caribbean somewhere.
They do. They're
on vacation
paradise.
Together.
Yeah. Somewhere in Essos.
They're in Orlando with Eric and Zach.
It looked like the big establishing shot at the beginning of this. I was like, it looks like Beverly Hills. Or like I went to several places in like southern France. There's like Monaco has this beautiful garden that looks like that. So I maybe somewhere like that.
And then we get a sequence of cutscenes, and one of them struck me as being a little weird. Uh-huh. It was Missandei and Grey Worm,
and they're kissing. OTP. Yeah. I love them. They are so cute.
Which is interesting, considering a number of things. We don't have to go into it, but
yeah. Well, then we have. A guy hitting another guy over the head, and we have Melisandre showing her boobs to somebody, and then we have Dany walking down the stairs surrounded by her Unsullied.
And looks like we have Daario there with Barristan and Grey Worm.
Yeah, and we have Illyria Sand. It looks like her. She's being menaced by a bunch of spears.
Yeah, it's a little hard to make out.
Yeah, it's a little fuzzy, but she was wearing that same hairstyle earlier in the trailer.
Yeah, so it's either her or one of the sand snakes in that scene. I'm not sure which one.
There's some fingernails on wood, looking rough. Maybe Reek. There's a very fast shot of a bald man with an axe. Looks like a wildling. It gets very hard to go scene by scene here because we're like, I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
Ygritte is dead, so it can't be her.
Yeah. Well, there's some horsies riding super fast around a keep. There's some masters. We know they're masters or like they're slaves dressed as masters because they're stabbing other people.
And then is that Marjorie again?
That looks like Marjorie. Yep. She's hugging somebody. Probably Tommen. Mm-hmm. There's fighting. Another fighting pit. Maybe the same fighting pit.
Yeah. Dany looks like she's standing right in the middle of it.
She is. Yeah.
White dress.
And there's a bunch of Targaryen flags hoisted around the arena. And people are running from the stands. So I suspect something has gone awry here.
Yeah.
And like they've turned on Dany.
Some problems for Dany. What a shock.
There's a crow and he's feasting. And then.
Title drop.
The coolest, I'd say the money shot of this trailer. If you only have 3 seconds to watch the trailer, watch like minute 46 through like minute 50. And it's a wonderful, wonderful shot of them toppling the harpy.
Yeah. And that's really how the trailer
ends.
If we remember, that's where the Targaryen banner was hung at the end of last season.
Right.
And that's right. So now they're tearing down the statues, right? As the song was playing earlier in the trailer. So
yeah.
It's just a lot to digest, a lot. And I'm sure we'll spend some more time on it. Zach and Eric will provide their thoughts. They saw it in Orlando. And once we're all back together, we'll get into more detail. But I think I can speak for both of us when I say we're really excited for this season. There's going to be more to come. Obviously, there's been photos officially released, some pertaining to this trailer, some otherwise. And we'll go through those in the coming weeks. And just a lot to look forward to. This is just one of probably several trailers that we're going to get before season 5 premieres.
Before we leave it, there's sort of a relevant question on Twitter from Bevan Boychuk, who says, based on show and book progress, how many seasons do you think we have left?
I would say 2.
I would say they'd stretch it to 3. This has been such a moneymaker for HBO, and in such a like a non-destructive way, I feel like. Sometimes a show can just go on too long, and you know that they don't know where they're going, but we all know that we know where this show's going. Like, George has a plan for this. He knows how it ends. He's told D&D how it ends. So I would guess 3 more.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see who's right.
Yeah.
A couple years from now, or when they officially announce how many more seasons they're going to have. But we did ask for listeners on Twitter to, send us your thoughts, Unsullied, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Johan actually had a question for us. He said, "Varys seems to want to help Daenerys. Do you think this always has been the case?" And we touched on this a little bit earlier on in the show. I think his allegiance is becoming very clear in this trailer, and we'll see more of it this season. But has it always been the case? I think based on his actions now, you can assume that on some level, he's always worked for the Targaryens, because that's who he was originally brought to court to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's just kind of been in the background as a master manipulator through the reign of King Robert and, Joffrey and now Tommen. And I think that it's hard to tell if he's always been in their corner, but I think he may see Daenerys as having the best potential to unite the realm. And, he's always had these one-liners in the show about being there for the good of the realm. And if that's truly who he serves, or what he serves, his purpose, then I think that she is the best option for that right now.
I agree. And I don't know if we can truly say whether Varys's loyalty has ever been focused on one person throughout the entire story. I think it's possible that it fluctuates day to day, hour to hour, wherever he can see the most advantage for himself. I think that Varys is ultimately very interested in keeping himself and his information and his power as close to the seat of power in the realm as we've seen. So
I think he would be an interesting person to get a point of view chapter from.
Oh my God.
The things that must go through his mind.
So and good, yeah.
It's hard to say, as you pointed out, because a character like Tyrion, for example, he has a good relationship with Tyrion, and Tyrion is a Lannister. And I think he could have easily had a good working relationship with Ned Stark, too. I think that he actually valued a lot of the attributes that Ned had.
I think so, too.
To say that he's completely pro-Targaryen, it's hard. But at this moment, seeing what we've now seen in the trailer, I think it's safe to say that he is backing her and trying to do what is necessary to help her claim the throne in Westeros.
Certainly now he's very publicly extending his information and his power and his loyalty to the Targaryens.
Mm-hmm. And then Matthew Canfield asked us, it looks like Jon is leading the wildlings in battle, but against who? The Mannis? I think it's really hard with those scenes to try and figure out who's fighting who and who's leading who into battle. I mean, there's certainly the book to use as reference, but we don't want to do that because we don't want to spoil anything. But I, just for me, those shots are the hardest because of the attire that they wear is very similar. And
I don't know if I can really give opinion on this from like an unsullied perspective, because I do remember what happens with John. So I don't particularly think it's a super good idea to speculate on.
Yeah, I agree. The Lady Ash says, I'm so excited to see more of Dorne and where Tyrion is and what Littlefinger is up to.
Yeah. In fact, some of the scenes with Varys and Tyrion remind me of how I imagined Dorne to look when I first started reading this book. It's just like lots of sunshine and tropical fruits. And he talks about the blood oranges. He's like the Prince Doran has gout in his feet. And he talks about how the blood oranges like burst and how his feet look like the blood oranges. It's pretty gross. I like graphically remember that scene. So it's
tasty.
Wherever they are, it's just like this beautiful, beautiful place. But I think seeing more of Dorne, even if it is more of a desert locale, because we haven't had a lot of desert yet besides the Khalasar scenes.
I think it's clear we're going there. We've seen a couple of scenes to lead us to believe that, and certain characters in those scenes. So I'm looking forward to Dorne too. And I think based on what we've seen in the trailer, it's going to be really cool. And then finally, Gary Manis, speculating Tyrion on his way to Dany, based on what Varys had to say. And a sand snake doing her best Indiana Jones impression. Seven Hells, I'm pumped.
Yeah, this is going to be a great season.
Yeah, definitely. And, we will, of course, continue to get your feedback on the season 5 trailer. Keep sending it in at Game of Owns on Twitter, or post on our wall on Facebook, facebook.com/Game of Owns, or email us, contact@GameOfOwns.com. Any of those ways is a great way to get in touch with us. And we look forward to sharing your excitement on this trailer. I'm sure we'll talk about it more as we find a way to reconvene our council. We're a very small council here today of two.
Well, hopefully this episode will be spliced in with lots of Zach and Eric, so you'll have all four of us.
We'll be back next week with a full crew and ready to digest more of season 5.
Some chapters.
Oh, yeah, those two. See this is what happens. This is what happens. Now we're screwed.
I'm here to interrupt the eloquent episode closings of Micah and Kate to offer up a special treat to those of you listening in celebration of our upcoming new series of episodes that are Sullied-centric, which is something that we're really very excited about. And I've had many long hours of conversations sort of poring over what we'd like to do with those. This new trailer begs for more than one perspective, obviously more than just the Sullied perspective, and we know that many of you out there are in the latter camp that Micah and Kate share. So why not explore further and eavesdrop on another conversation with Micah and Kate as they answer emails, read the tweets, I think. I'm not really sure because I can't listen to it. And I suppose just in general, talk about things of which I have absolutely no idea. Please enjoy.
So nice. Oh, it's so nice. It's like being on a plane for like a super long trip, like you're going to Tokyo or something, and you get to stand up at the end and stretch. That's how it feels to do an Unsullied or Sullied episode for me, because I'm just like, I can just say whatever the hell I want and not worry about anything.
That's right. So for those who are Unsullied, we will warn you one more time. What we're about to get into is spoiler territory.
Spoiler.
We never encourage you to turn us off at any time, except for now, because we don't want to be responsible for you spoiling, or for us spoiling you on anything beyond what you've seen or read. And we can't stress that enough. We want to do this because, I think it gives us a good opportunity to talk about some things that a lot of our listeners have been thinking about over the last probably a few days, having seen the trailer. Mm-hmm. And we did a spoiler-esque episode not that long ago at the end of season 4, because a certain character was left out. But I will say here and now, please turn us off if you do not want to be spoiled, because we're about to jump into it.
Yep.
We got some emails that we're going to tie into the trailer talk. The trailer is going to be the focus.
Yes.
I think we can start safely, right, with Tyrion's storyline. Let's begin there, because I think that with Varys, number one, having traveled with him across the Narrow Sea.
Mm-hmm. That's
we don't get that in the books.
Different. Yep. Okay.
And Tyrion, of course, ends up in the hands of Magister Illyrio.
Right.
Who we know to be another supporter of the Targaryens. We got a great question earlier on in the episode talking about Varys' allegiance. And I think that the trailer begins to show at least his allegiance as it stands in the moment. But I feel, at least having read through Book 5, that Varys, his allegiance is with the Targaryens. And it's proven towards the end of Book 5. And really, Tyrion's storyline is going to be different in the show. And I think they did it in a way such that it just speeds things up a little bit. But one of the major omissions, at least for the time being, it seems, that the show has decided upon is that of young Griff.
Right. And I think that's so as a refresher, because I just had to have my own little refresher for young Griff. Young Griff is the nickname that they've given to Aegon Targaryen, the youngest. He is the offspring of Rhaegar and Aelya, the surviving offspring. And I guess until we meet young Griff, we are under the impression that Rhaegar's children were all murdered. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's Tyrion who, on his journey with this group, discovers the truth about young Griff and the fact that he is Aegon Targaryen, and that the protector of him is, in fact, Jon Connington, who was hand to Rhaegar during his time. So, there's always these big surprises that come into play from George, and I think that this was very cleverly written. Somebody actually asked about how did Tyrion make this discovery. I think Tyrion innately is a very smart individual, and I think based on certain things that were taking place around him, his observations, knowing who was responsible for pairing him up with this group that he is traveling with, he started putting pieces of the puzzle together. And he was able to deduce that he was traveling with the one who has the strongest claim, right, to the Iron Throne.
Right. And it makes a lot of sense that there, because it seems like the story about Rhaegar and Aelya's offspring was really ironclad up to this point. Everybody told the same tale, which was that the baby was torn from her breast and its head was dashed against the wall. I remember this very, very clearly, and this is part of the reason why Gregor Clegane is considered to be such a monster, is because he was able to just thoughtlessly murder this infant child. But it actually makes plenty of sense that this would be the ironclad story, especially if it had anything to do with Varys protecting the Targaryen line. Varys would be excellent at disseminating a rumor that was super not true and making everyone think it was true, right? So, and then secreting the boy away. And so I think that's a really interesting, it's one of those things in this story that makes you question everything you know. This is like this is what happened. And there's no question about it, because everybody thinks that this is what happened and this is just part of the lore. And then it's totally not what happened. This kid is alive and well. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
It is a very Varys thing to do. If in fact he is such a strong supporter of the Targaryens and their line, you would find it pretty easy to believe the fact that he would protect young Aegon and get him away before any ill could befall him, seeing him as the rightful heir to the throne, should the opportunity present itself later on. And we learn throughout the story that, he's being trained, he's being, raised to go back to Westeros and to claim what's rightfully his. But this omission from season five, right? We've not gotten any news of casting. It's possible that, there are things that have been left out of this trailer, but what really kind of solidifies for me the fact that he's not going to be in this season is the fact that we've also seen Tyrion get paired up with Ser Jorah very, very quickly. And we know how that storyline ultimately plays itself out. So if they're kind of skipping and putting him with a character that we're all familiar with, as opposed to throwing him in with a bunch of people that we've never heard of before, mm-hmm. you wonder what is the real sort of purpose behind Aegon and behind John Connington. Is this just some red herring that George has thrown out there? And why would Varys want somebody who is essentially a fraud to try and take back the Iron Throne?
I don't know. It's all very confusing. I'm recalling other details about this, the murder of the babe. Apparently there was a baby that was killed. It just was not actually Aegon. It was a duplicate baby, a decoy baby that was killed. So that was not the rumor, but the rumor being that Aegon was killed is true. So I don't know that I necessarily disagree with the removal of this character, because it is such like a purposefully clouded version of what I think Varys intends, which is that the Targaryens reclaim the throne. So if George's intention were to get Aegon back on the throne with Daenerys by his side or something, it seems it's a little odd for us to have cared so much about Daenerys as a character and to have either rooted for her or booed her or whatever, and then to put somebody else on the Iron Throne. Who has more of a right to it or whatever. I've always thought that the character of Young Griff was a little weird in that way, because I was like, well, why do I mean, it's cool that this kid is alive, of course, but why do I care about him getting like his rightful place back? Is it just Varys hedging his bets and being like, well, if Dany gets murdered somewhere along the way, at least we've got this other Targaryen in the wings ready to come along? What do you think?
Yeah, it's almost like you wonder what's true and what's not true, because there are Targaryens now that are just popping up everywhere. Initially, you thought it was just Dany and Viserys,
right?
And Viserys gets killed in Game of Thrones, and now you have Dany. And to your point, you've been supporting her all along. You've been behind her. You've wanted her to succeed and to finally make her way back to Westeros and claim the throne for herself. And now all of a sudden, you're faced with a character long thought to be dead, who has been brought up and trained, in many different ways, both physically and academically, to one day return home and claim what is rightfully his. And it's almost as if there would be this clash between the two of them, right?
Right.
Because you're talking about Rhaegar's son versus Rhaegar's sister. And, in terms of who has the true rightful claim, could get a little bit murky there. Though I guess Aegon could technically marry Daenerys and, that would clear all of that up. But, and then you think about Jon as a potential Targaryen. Technically, he's only half Targaryen, but he would also have some sort of claim if that were to be proved true. To the throne. So it's almost like a three-way power struggle between them, depending on when John actually learns the truth about himself. And so what bothers me, and I think it's going to happen a lot now as we move forward, as the television show begins to surpass what is in the books, you're going to learn a lot about what is important versus what's not important.
Right.
And I think as a reader, that hurts you a little bit, because you've invested so much time reading these books, and you understand things do have to be cut.
Sure.
There's no way all of this stuff could end up in a television show Otherwise, there would be way more than 7 or 8 seasons. There's just too much. But at the same time, you have to feel that if this storyline is not some way included, and maybe they're able to bring it back in later on, in season 6,
right? Well, one of our questions about young Griff from Evan Brewer asks if it means that they cut him because he's not relevant to the ending of the novels, and whether or not that's the case. I don't think that they would make such an obvious broad cut that would essentially spoil the plot line of an entire set of characters that we've been reading about. I don't think they would do that intentionally. I think that he is, as I've said before, my theory is that the novels and the show are going to go two very, very different directions eventually. I think we'll compare the finale of the show with the end of the books and say that they will be like, wow, they really, it's almost like a slightly off parallel universe ending of the story. That's my theory. I think maybe the major events will be the same, but the details will be different. And so I think that young Griff, if he weren't relevant to the end of the novels, George would not have gone to such trouble to introduce him and to keep him alive through a variety of calamity that he's gone through in his life. He's got some purpose in the books, and it might be that he's just not going to be in season 5, but as I've theorized, we have at least 2 more seasons beyond that, so he could be in season 6. I don't know. I don't think he's irrelevant. I think leaving him out of season 5 makes a lot of sense because you've got however many 100 million people watching this show now, some ridiculous number. And so to have all those people have to now be introduced to a new Targaryen that they have to cheer for, I think it would just be confusing storytelling for television. And in some ways it's confusing storytelling for a book too, but apparently, there's a popular theory that he's like a fake, that he's not a real Targaryen, and I wondered what you think about that, Micah.
It never really crossed my mind. I've seen the theories, and some people wrote in with that question. They call him Fagon as opposed to Aegon.
I like that.
And look, anything is possible, right? Sure. George can turn the story as quick as he wants to in another direction. We've seen it happen plenty of times. And if he is truly a fake, I think you can make the case then that's why he's been cut out of this season, because he's just irrelevant. But I think you spend so much time though with Tyrion and his travels. And really at the end of book 5, he's yet to come in contact with Daenerys. You know, the fact that in this season we've seen photos of him sitting at her side means that this season is going to move much more quickly, and they're trying to get to a resolution of him getting to Daenerys much more quickly.
Yes.
We've seen some shots of him with Jorah, so clearly the two of them are going to pair up. How quickly? It depends on, you know, when he leaves Varys.
Right.
And we know Varys ends up coming back to Westeros at the end of book 5. He takes care of Grand Meister Pycelle. He takes care of Kevin Lannister. And there's a bunch of creepy children running around.
Yeah.
So that's the epilogue to book 5. And the question then is, with Aegon now being back also himself in Westeros, is Varys paving the way for him to come to King's Landing and to take the Iron Throne?
Yeah.
It's a lot to think on, and you know, for book readers, the omission of this character and those that accompany him are going to leave a lot of question marks probably until we at least get the next book.
What do you think of just because I think it's relevant to the trailer? Do you think that the fighting pit that we saw several times in the trailer, which is a gorgeous set, and it's clear why they put it in because it's amazing, but do you think that has anything to do with Tyrion and the band that he joins up with Penny?
It's possible. I remember that scene too, from book 5 when Drogon shows up And I'm wondering if that's going to be that scene. It's all speculation. I mean, it's funny that even though we're talking about spoilers, it's a lot of it is still conjecture because we don't really know what's going to happen beyond what we've read. So even things that we're seeing in this trailer, we can't be 100% certain on because we know that the show is going to deviate slightly from the books.
Right. Because in the books, Tyrion he's captured by Jorah, right? Mm-hmm. And then he's made to like fight in these pits while he's mounted on a pig, which I can't see that Peter Dinklage would ever do that. it seems a little undignified for Peter Dinklage to like ride on a pig and joust. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're going to put him through that, but that was one of the most the vivid things that I remember from those books is this idea of Tyrion so lowed that he had to fight and he made a friend, which was kind of sweet.
He does. We got a question from Tim Mulligan. He asked specifically about the exclusion of Aegon and Griff, who is of course playing young Griff's father, but is in fact John Connington. And you know, we've talked enough about that, I think, at this point. But one other thing that he brought up was, I've a running bet with another sullied friend of mine since season 3 that this will be the season that Balon Greyjoy finally dies on the show. Think I'm going to lose again? I have not seen anything in the trailers about the Ironborn, so I'm thinking we might lose Asha/Yara. And the awesomeness that is the Kingsmoot.
Mm.
Very possible.
Yeah, the Greyjoys are an intriguing family, but I find that if I had to cut something from the books, it would definitely be the Kingsmoot, because the Kingsmoot, while cool and like introducing like the neat uncles, the Greyjoy uncles. It was dreary. It was long. It was
a little boring,
somewhat uneventful. Yeah. And so I can't see that being like compelling television for a show that has to be like, okay, we have 12 hours. What is worth every second of being in that 12 hours? Mm-hmm. The Kingsmoot would not be high on my personal list. And no. Maybe that's going to be sacrilege to you Greyjoy fans out there, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think certainly there's the chance that they come into play at some point later on. If they have a pivotal role to play, we know that they'll make their way into the series. Theon/Reek is still around. We saw him in the trailer. And we don't really know what is to become, at least from the show standpoint, of Asha. And Balon, quite honestly, could die off screen. I don't think he has to die on screen. It could just be a mention that's made by anybody, in King's Landing or throughout Westeros. Just the news will spread that Balon Greyjoy has died. And I think, you know, maybe they just make mention of who has, taken up his place.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I know there are a lot of Greyjoy fans out there and they have a very interesting storyline moving through books 4 and 5, but unfortunately, I think it's cut.
If we
haven't seen anything to prove it otherwise.
Exactly. If we had seen more of the Greyjoy drama before now, if we had, as viewers of a television show, become invested in that family a bit more, I think that we would definitely get some Kingsmoot action. But to just throw the Kingsmoot in when we haven't spent any significant time with the Greyjoys, and Theon is kind of like the most interesting character right now, I don't see them wasting time on it. So yeah, we're mm-hmm. gonna have to stay in the theater of the imagination for that one, I think.
Yeah. Well, one other big thing I did want to talk about was we mentioned earlier on when we were talking through the trailer and didn't want to get into spoiler territory. There's a scene with this young girl cutting her finger open. And I thought when I had seen that it was a younger version of Cersei who
makes sense.
Making a visit to Maggie the Frog. who we know has been cast this season. And there's actually a scene later on in the trailer with two girls walking hand in hand into the forest. And I thought that that, again, was a flashback to when Cersei recalls this moment. And we don't get many flashbacks in the series at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be, aside from really the dreams that Bran has had, right?
Yeah.
The only time that I can remember that we're having, we're going back in time to see something that's taken place.
Yeah, we have some interesting stuff happening here. Maggie the Frog is such an interesting character. And I like that there's this prophecy. It's always been interesting to me that the prophecy about her, Maggie the Frog tells her at some point, she's asking her if she's going to be queen and if she gets to marry the prince, because she's fallen in love with Prince Rhaegar from afar. And so this witch woman tells her that she'll be queen. And she also says that her brother, the Valonqar, shall wrap his hands about your pale white throat and choke the life from you. Valonqar meaning little brother. And so as a result, she has hated Tyrion from a young age because this witch woman told her that her little brother was going to choke the life out of her. And I don't think she ever acknowledges the fact that Jaime is also her little brother. She was born mere moments before Jaime, and their relationship has turned so toxic at this point and so bizarre. I see that being her fate. I think that Jaime will kill her.
Ooh. Yeah, that's definitely a popular theory. I think with Tyrion, it's just almost too easy, right? If he's the one that ends up killing Cersei. But that said, it could still happen. We don't know how it's going to play itself out. But another part of that prophecy was you mentioned that she would be queen until the time comes where another younger and more beautiful to cast you down and take all that you hold dear. So, you know, there's been a lot of speculation on that part of it.
Sure.
Is that Marjorie? Is that Daenerys? Who are we talking about here?
Well, I think that's why she's so suspicious of first Sansa and then Marjorie, because she's had this prophecy, this set of prophecies haunting her whole life. Like who's going to be the one to take it? It's almost like the Greek prophecies from old, is like the prophecy of Oedipus and like all kinds of these like Greek prophecies that no matter what you do, they're going to come to pass. And so right. It you can spend your whole life preparing for them, but you won't see them coming. And so the fact that Cersei has so stubbornly believed that Daenerys is not a threat is why this prophecy is indicating Daenerys to me.
Mm-hmm. And she's been pretty spot on if you look at the fact she says, in terms of the number of children, you know, Cersei asked the question, will the king and I have children? And Maggie says, oh, I. 6 and 10 for him and 3 for you.
16 Baratheon bastards hanging out there somewhere in the world. I don't know if that's the first time we've gotten the exact number of how many bastard children Robert has. But
we know Robert was a busy man.
He was. It's interesting to think that any of them would have more of a claim on the throne than Tommen or Myrcella at this point.
Yeah. Do you worry about the part where it says to take all that you hold dear? Obviously, we know that Cersei holds her children dear more than anything else.
Right.
And this younger, more beautiful queen that's going to come, do you think that poses a serious danger to the two of them?
I don't see Daenerys being the kind of person to murder children, especially if she gets there while Myrcella and Tommen are still so young. I don't see that being in her character profile. However, I think that if they were to put up a fight, it's possible that Daenerys would have to take him out. It's also possible that just means that she might win them over somehow and turn them against Cersei. There's a lot of possibilities there.
That's interesting. And speaking of Myrcella, we saw shots of Jamie in the trailer in Dorne.
Yes.
And that is really interesting to me because that's a complete departure. He's traveling with Bronn, number one, and they're making their way, and they look like they arrive in Dorne and have some interaction with people there. But complete departure from the books there. It's going to make for good TV, I'm sure. Yeah. But the fact that Jaime is not following along his path that was laid out in A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons, I'm wondering, you know, maybe eventually we'll get there, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, he heads north in the books, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he heads to River Run.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, so this is totally different. So I think this is the playing out of my personal theory, which I think you probably share, Micah, which is that the books and the show are going to be parallel universe versions of each other. It's more like, what if Jamie went south instead of north? Let's play with the existing, like the actual characters, the existing trajectories of like who's in Dorne, who's in Harrenhal, all that stuff. But then just take one key perspective character and just switch them. Like nothing out of character is going to happen, but it's just a different approach. What if in the Choose Your Own Adventure book of Westeros, Jaime had decided to go south instead of north, which mm-hmm. I super duper 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 appreciate. And I think you and I may differ on this, but I've said this before. Season one of the show was so similar and so faithful to the books. I was
100%.
I was bored.
Almost identical.
Yeah, I was bored by it. It was so faithful. And I was like, ugh. And then once we started getting into season three and four and we started seeing these differences, especially like stuff like the Brienne and the Hound fight, I was like, okay, you want to surprise me. You want to put characters together who have established profiles and personalities and just see what they would do together. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, who would win in a fight, like Batman or fucking, I don't know, G.I. Joe's. I can't think of anybody else. Like Batman or the Hulk.
That's good.
You know?
Good enough.
I don't know if Batman and the Hulk ever fought. I imagine.
It's so interesting because, you know, one of the things I love about rereading the books is you forget just how much interaction there was between certain characters that are now completely in different parts of this world. Mm-hmm. And you know, to your point though, the show does a great job of taking characters as well that normally wouldn't interact with each other and never cross paths.
Right.
And here they are.
Yeah.
And the Hound of Brienne is a perfect example of that. I'm looking forward to seeing how this all plays itself out. And like you said, we're going to, once all these seasons are wrapped, be in a place where we can take them and compare them to how the books ended. Hopefully we'll have the last book by the time the series comes to an end, though I don't think there are any guarantees there.
No, I don't think so either.
Mm-hmm. So one other thing before we kind of wrap things up here and you know, just to let everybody know, I think our plan moving forward for these spoiler episodes is to really theme them and to focus in on maybe one or two topics. We'll take your tweets, your emails, and other questions that you have. Maybe bring on a guest or two to really talk through the details of some theories and anything that you consider to be a spoiler. Mm-hmm. So on that note, we did get a lot of questions about John.
I think John deserves his own episode.
He does deserve his own episode. But my question to you is, we've seen the trailer,
sure.
And we know there's some big moments coming this season. Cersei's Walk of Shame comes to mind. that's just what I call
sure.
it.
Sure.
But, you know, John's story has progressed extremely far. And mm-hmm. we know how his character wraps A Dance with Dragons in that he supposedly dies. So
yeah.
I'm wondering, I'm asking you this now, mm-hmm. and my theory is that is how the season is going to end.
Right. That would be a tremendously good season ending. I've had my own theories about how seasons will end before, and I've been mistaken. So
we did a whole episode or part of an episode on that.
I think,
right?
So, yeah. I had my like perfect episode ending, and it was a little too neat and tidy. It was the idea that like season three would have ended with both Rob and Joffrey dying together, like at their different weddings, just like cutting back and forth between their deaths, and then they both lie dead, and then the season's just over. But yeah. it was much better done to make you think that the bad guys were winning. So anyway, I think that that Jon's end, the problem is if they come to Jon's end at the end of season five, where do they go from there?
Well, we don't know because we don't have the next book.
Well, it's just that he's got books four and five, I think, a worth of content. There's stuff for Jon to do, right? Like where Jon's at right now is still pretty timely inside of like book four, if I'm not mistaken. Like book four is where he becomes the Lord Commander, right? Am I wrong about that?
One sec.
This is going to be an unedited show, so our Google searching right now is in real time. But yeah, he does become the Lord Commander of the Wall, and I think that there's a significant amount of stuff that happens. There's an incredible battle, which didn't look like it was happening at the wall in the trailer. It looked like it was it was obviously the boats. The Night's Watch was approaching a wildling encampment on rowboats. So that did not look like Castle Black. And Castle Black gets its own huge fight, if I'm not mistaken. Like there's still a giant assault that's going to happen there with Jon commanding the wall. So if that were to happen, I mean, it concatenates a lot of the content into a very like tidy season, which is kind of, it feels like that's what they're going for, is they're tidying up a lot of these storylines that tend to wander. So maybe that is what we'll see. I hope not, because I love Jon. And I think that a lot of people are like, Melisandre is probably going to revive him the way that Thoros of Myr does with Beric Dondarrion. And I think that is much more likely than letting him be dead, because although we lost his perspective chapters, which to me is like the death knell for a character in this for the characters in this book, is if you have a perspective chapter or you lose it or you lose it or you never have it in the first place, chances are good you're going to die. So the fact that Jon didn't get them anymore, I was like, oh, Jon. And then he's dead. I think that Melisandre will revive him, but I hope they draw him out a little bit more, because I think he has a decent amount of stuff to do still.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. And you know, just to go back to your question earlier, you know, Jon becomes the Lord Commander at the end of A Storm of Swords,
right?
And he's absent from A Feast for Crows, comes back in A Dance with Dragons. So, you know, we leave the wall a little bit, at least from, if I remember that correctly, and Sam is off on his journey doing things.
Right.
Doing Gilly, actually.
Yeah. Yo, Sam. You're right. I keep forgetting that Feast for Crows and Dance with Dragons run at the same time as each other. So it's not like two sets of timelines that we're having to deal with for season five. It's just the one timeline split across two books. I remember when George was writing it and he was blogging about it, and he said that the publisher made him split it into two books because it could not physically be bound by mortal bookbinding technique. So that's why he was forced to split it up.
That's why we got digital now.
Yeah, no bookbinding needed. So yeah, I don't know. I think that would be a killer way to end any season, though, Micah. I think that having Jon die would
no pun intended.
I think that it would crush a lot of hearts, because we've never seen, as far as I know, we've never seen Melisandre revive anyone. As we've discussed on the show before, she seems to be the death element of the Lord of Light, and Thoros is the life element. But I assume she has it in her.
I assume she does too. And, you know, certainly there's the opportunity for him to warg into Ghost. We've seen him do it at times in prior books. And we know that Bran has no problem warging into Summer. And, you know, there's the prologue, I think, in A Dance with Dragons, right, actually focuses on a skin changer, you know, who has the ability to warg into a bunch of different animals. I apologize, I'm completely blanking on the name, but I think that there's relevance in that. You know, George R. R. Martin doesn't write that for no reason.
Sure.
And I think the fact that John dies very, you know, later on towards the end of the book, you know, there's a very, very good chance that we could see him from Ghost's perspective early on.
That would be so cool.
And now, to your point, there's also the very good chance, you know, at some point that Melisandre brings him back, because I think she sees something in him.
Right.
She, you know, as they were gazing at each other through the fire,
she was like, last season, I think he's Azor Ahai reborn, if you know what I mean. It's like just whoever she wants to bang. She's like, I'm pretty sure you're Azor Ahai reborn. Let's take off your pants and find out for sure. Okay. I feel like that's probably enough sullied content for now. This was just a little preview. Little taste. I think our Sullied episodes in the future will be standalone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It just made sense here with the trailer, and I'm sure there's a lot of other things that we could touch on that came up in the trailer that differ from the books, and, you know, different theories that we can talk about and plot points that we can talk about. But yeah, they will be standalone episodes, and they will focus, as we mentioned earlier, on any number of things, but they will have a, you know, very clear focus, and we will let the listeners know what that focus is. We'll make sure that, you know, we push it out on social media, and we let you guys respond and send in emails about that particular topic. And we will also look to have on some guests that can add to the discussion.
I think we will probably set up a new email address. Or we should.
Yes, that's a good idea. I already had that problem earlier when I was going through the emails, and I'm like, oh, damn, if Eric or Zach look at these
even the subject titles, lines,
they're gonna get spoiled. Okay. So we're going to go ahead, and we'll let you guys know exactly what that email address is.
Yeah, watch Twitter or Facebook for that.
Yeah, and this way you can be as sullied as you want in subject lines, in the body of the email, and we don't have to worry about spoiling Zach or Eric, but I did look it up. It's Varamyr Sixskins.
That's Varamyr Sixskins. The prologue was the wildling.
So bear with us. You know, we're a little old.
We're rusty.
You know, things escape our minds from time to time. But that's the power of the internet, to have it available to us.
Right.
And I'm actually in the middle of rereading A Dance with Dragons, so I think that'll be helpful.
Yeah, I'm gonna start my reread of Feast for Crows and Dance.
And, you know, look, we're not perfect.
We're not.
The reality. That's why you guys are listening, and you can chime in and say, yo, you guys are so stupid. How did you get that wrong?
That's your job. I want every email that is addressed to us that's correcting us on something to be like, you guys are so stupid. Here's how it actually is. And we're like, okay. It keeps us humble.
Yeah. But this has been fun.
Yeah.
We're going to obviously keep doing it. And, you know, if you have any ideas too about what you want a specific show to focus on, feel free to email us, let us know. We'll take it into consideration, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
All right. So, bye for the second
time. Bye. Bye again.
For real this time.
We're not coming back. Goodbye.